In this episode, we'll learn, can health insurance prevent bankruptcy? We go into the top two causes of bankruptcy, how to get around some of the open enrollment rules and deadlines, and what is one way to game the Obamacare system. As always, if this episode helps you, brings you value in any way, please do me a favor, share it with a friend. Thank you and enjoy the show. Welcome to Build Your Wealth Muscle, a podcast dedicated to helping fitness entrepreneurs build wealth by saving taxes and growing their money. Each episode will break down different strategies in the areas of business, tax, and retirement planning specifically for your coaching business. Disclaimer, the topics covered in this podcast are for educational purposes only. This is not advice for your specific situation. Please consult a qualified financial or tax professional before making any changes to your financial or tax situation. Now here's your host, certified financial planner and tax advisor, Pat Darby. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Build Your Wealth Muscle. Today's topic is very much about wealth building and wealth protection. Well, more so the protection of the wealth, because I just recently shared, and again, I want these topics to sort of blend together for you, because when people sit down, whether it's financial planning or the tax advisory, which obviously the people are trying to keep more of their revenue and their income, and hopefully, I mean, at least people that come to me, they're looking to do something with that, either invest it back in the business or different personal assets. The challenge is it's often painful, for lack of a better term, to use certain wealth protection strategies. Because in the world of insurance, for example, there are ways to protect your wealth, but those are often expenses in your life. So it's not necessarily too sexy or appealing to sit down with a financial person and they're immediately starting to talk to you about increasing the expenses in your life instead of just, what do I do with my money? Because that's like a lot of times when people sit down, like, they're doing better at work, they got this money, how do I invest it, what do I do? But this topic tends to get overlooked, and I want to highlight it because the number one reason for bankruptcy is loss of income. So again, I just shared on my stories today, as I'm recording this today, about disability insurance, protecting that income. The number two reason for bankruptcy is high medical expenses. And obviously, typically those are like unexpected medical expenses. I had a friend and a colleague years ago, when I actually had just started in finance. Poor guy, he had no health insurance. He dove into the water head first and broke his neck. He was actually like, I didn't know this for maybe 6 months or so. So like he was fine. He was walking around. He was totally normal. He could play basketball with us. Like, but that incident, I met him in 2010. This probably happened to him, I think, 5 or 10 years earlier. I forget. But that incident was an $80,000 medical bill to him that he couldn't afford. So that was following him around when I met him still, because he didn't pay it. He had to walk away from it. So it's important, because again, if you're walking around, a lot of people listening to this are young and healthy. It's those unexpected catastrophic events that could destroy your financial situation, because that's one example. Now, like, medical costs have gone up so much. You know, God forbid you step off the street and you get hit by a car or something like that. There could be hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical expenses if you are not covered. God forbid you need to. I was actually talking to a friend the other day. I think he said if you need a helicopter, it could be as much as like $500,000 if you need a helicopter from like a third world country or something, like if you get like hurt on vacation or something. But like, that's just the point, is if you're not prepared for those catastrophic expenses, it could destroy your financial situation, and then you're talking bankruptcy if you're trying to get out of it. Conversely, there's ways you can cover. So every time I talk about health insurance, it's typically the lowest engagement I have on my social media, but I can't emphasize it enough. That's why I purposely started with like the end in mind, like why we're doing this, like why we're spending some time figuring out, for X hundreds of dollars a month, I can protect myself and my family from that catastrophic medical event. So let's dive into it and why it matters right now in late October as I'm recording this. Open enrollment is coming up. It's November 1st to January 15th. Now, what does that mean? Open enrollment is that as an individual, whether you're self-employed or unemployed and you're just looking for insurance, or you work for an employer who doesn't offer insurance, that makes you eligible or in the world of individual coverage. In individual coverage, you don't have the flexibility of just saying, well, I don't need insurance right now, but March I would like it. And then February, go to the insurance company and say, hey, can I have insurance now, please? They'll say no, because us individuals, whether, again, I'm an individual because I am a business owner, the once a year is when we have our open enrollment period. And that's November 1st to January 15th. Now, it's really December 15th if you want January 1st coverage. The January 15th deadline, it's open up that basically you can start in February. But I'm telling this whole point of this whole podcast episode is to get you coverage as soon as possible. So now there are different ways to get insurance sooner than that. So don't think that that is the only option. And this is where working with a qualified health insurance broker is really valuable. The challenge with that is, thanks to Obamacare, now there's some benefits to Obamacare, but one thing it did do, it stripped the commissions dramatically lower inside of health insurance. Even though premiums went up, the commissions went down. And unfortunately for you, the consumer, that meant a lot of smart people who used to be helping you with this are no longer, because it can't pay their bills for them to be a full-time health insurance person. The ones that I refer to that do this, they have to do it at scale. So unfortunately, that also hurts you in that they may not be interested in taking you through this long consultative process for you to buy an individual plan. So that's become the challenge. So I'm hoping I can make this episode as comprehensive as possible. And I've done other episodes on it, but this one will be, again, I want to bring up as much as possible because I know that it's not a sexy topic that people necessarily want to really dive into. So let's talk about some of those special enrollment periods. So again, we talked about open enrollment, but special enrollment periods. These are going to allow you to get insurance at any time during the year. Now, it has to be like the beginning of the upcoming month and whatnot. So there's going to be deadlines and things like that. But if you lost coverage, if for whatever reason you had coverage and you lost it, that could be because your employer shut it down, you lost your job, maybe a spouse lost their coverage and you were on theirs, that is a qualifying event. All of these things, these special enrollment periods, the SEPs, you just got to walk up to one of the insurance companies and show them the proof that this happened. Moving. A lot of these policies are state by state. So if you move states, then that is a qualifying event in your new home. So a lot of people, they're probably leaving California, heading to more or less liberal areas where they don't have to worry about taxes and high crime rates. If you're leaving a state, that's a qualifying event. Getting married, divorced, baby, adopting. And even if your income dramatically drops, that financial hardship can be a qualifying event. So don't assume because it's outside of open enrollment, you're screwed. And again, you really want to talk to someone in your local area. The big national companies, I don't love them, even though I'll refer out to them sometimes if my client has no other options or if we can't find someone locally. Obviously, something is better than nothing, but you typically do want to be local because they're going to have the inside track, not just on what you can read online, like you can go on and get a quote, but they're going to know the details of the plans and the policies and like what is actually better than it might look. So that having that in the fact that they'll have that inside knowledge, and health insurance is a state by state thing, which is very frustrating for you, the consumer, especially when you call up some of these national companies, because like when I was living in New Jersey, the plans in New York were so different than the ones in New Jersey. And we were like next door neighbors. So just keep that in mind. Now, if you are an employer, all of those things we just talked about fly right out the window, because in the group world, if you're willing to pay for policies for your team, the open enrollment is all year round. So if you don't have coverage right now, but you're like, hey, I'm going to have a non-spouse come on my plan, that makes it a qualifying plan. Again, you can't have your spouse. That doesn't qualify as a group. But if you have one non-spouse on the plan, so if you have one part-time or full-time employee that you want to bring onto the coverage, you can start at any time. Now, again, these are month-by-month basis, so there's going to be deadlines for getting the plan underwritten and things like that. What's really cool right now, again, I don't have a lot of compliments for Obamacare because it's totally jacking the pricing for all of us. And I'm not even of the mindset like, well, it's helping people that can't afford coverage. Even though that's true, the health insurance companies are so heavily padding the pricing in the middle that, yeah, it's helping people, but it could be dramatically lower cost if the health insurance companies would kind of get out of the way. Or if we would be allowed to have health insurance, at least in my opinion, if we were allowed to have health insurance that was like national instead of state by state. Because if you look at the data, when these plans came out, a lot of insurance companies were no longer profitable under the rules in a particular state. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe the penalty was like $1 million. And a lot of these insurance carriers are like, well, I'm going to lose more than $1 million. So here's your $1 million penalty and I'm out. When I was still in New Jersey, I think there was 4 carriers left. And I think more than 10 years ago, 10 years prior to that, there was over 30. So you can see how, as a consumer, Obamacare hurt the competition that we were able to benefit from as more and more carriers left the state. And there's just a few left and they all had to be profitable. So they had to increase their premiums. So in the group world, I'm sure, I forget why I went on that little tangent, but the one thing that is that was what I was going to say, that's a compliment to this. The one advantage to Obamacare, there's no underwriting. So you could be the most fit, healthy person ever. Your rate is your rate. Your best friend who's the same gender, age, whatever, they have the exact same price. No one's asking if you've had heart attacks, cancer, anything. No underwriting. They just want your name, your social, and your address, and your age. It's all based on age. So that is actually a very nice benefit, because I was maybe thinking when we're talking about the groups, is it was always a little bit stressful trying to get a group underwritten in the past. If somebody especially if you have like an older employee with maybe health conditions, that would impact everybody in the group. That's all gone. They're not asking you anything about your health. They just want to know your name, your address, your social, your date of birth. Like, that's it. So that's made it really nice. But that's the only compliment I have for Obamacare. All right. Now, sticking to the theme of Obamacare, what is it really? It's basically the ability, based on your income, to get lower health premiums. So how do they do that? So if they run the numbers and they say, okay, this is your age, this is your gender, so this is your price in this particular state. Let's say it's $500 a month, just to keep it simple. But then you can run the math, because there's like a certain calculation based on your income. So that they say, well, based on this person's income, that $500 a month would be a very meaningful percentage of their income. So we will reduce that premium to $150. So that's how Obamacare essentially works. And that difference is a premium tax credit that they're advancing you. So if that is you and you're in a lower income bracket, you can still go out to the marketplace, healthcare.gov, for example, and that's what you would do with Obamacare. Now, there's 2 cautionary tales here. If you go on healthcare.gov, now again, that's the national site. A lot of states have adopted their own version of healthcare.gov, so they're not on the main one. They're on their own. Like New York has their own, California has their own. I believe even Nevada, I forget. So if you're in a state that doesn't have their own, then you have to use healthcare.gov. And that's great as like a marketplace, like look at quotes. because it is very comprehensive in terms of like seeing what's out there to evaluate the plans and the coverages and all that stuff, and also see if you even qualify for the tax credits because you're going to give them your income. Now, if you do not qualify, let me just say one more thing about healthcare.gov. It's a middleman. That marketplace is a middleman between you and the insurance company, the insurance carrier, which if you're receiving those tax credits, they're critical because you can't get the tax credits without that middleman marketplace. However, if you're listening to this and you make good money, again, and unfortunately, the number isn't that high, you just have to make more than four times the federal poverty level to get kicked out. So if you're listening to this and you logged into healthcare.gov, you know you don't qualify. Say you're a six-figure earner and you're single, you know you're not going to qualify, but you look at all the plans, the pricing, and so you're like, okay, I really like this plan from Blue Cross Blue Shield. I highly recommend you then get off of healthcare.gov and now you go call Blue Cross Blue Shield and get your plan directly through them. Because again, the only purpose of healthcare.gov is for you to be able to get those tax credits. If you underwrite your plan through healthcare.gov when you don't get tax credits, all you've done is instituted the most irritating middleman you can imagine. Because you're going to have the simplest things. You're going to call up Blue Cross Blue Shield and be like, hey, I moved. Here's my new address. They're like, I can't help you. Go to the marketplace, ask them. And you end up in this no man's land, because I used to be certified on healthcare.gov to help people in New Jersey. So they put in my zip code and my name would come up. But if you don't qualify for that, then you'll ask healthcare.gov questions and they try to punt you to the insurance carrier. So just like with all the other things you can think of where like you get stuck between a company, like two divisions of a company. Like I remember back in the day, this would be an issue like with your cell phone. Like you're calling Apple and like, hey, I have a problem with my iPhone. And they're like, talk to Verizon. Verizon's like, well, you got to talk to Apple. And now you're just stuck unhelped as you get bounced back and forth. So if you're not receiving the tax credits, highly recommend do not underwrite that policy through the marketplace. Use the marketplace for what it is, which is a comprehensive source for pricing and availability, and you can learn a lot, but then go direct to the company that looks most appealing to you. Talk to their customer service and get it directly through them. Now, let's talk to the people who are at that income threshold where they don't know if they're going to qualify, or maybe you're in a tougher spot financially. So on healthcare.gov, you're going to qualify for the tax credits. That's not a bad thing per se. Here's what the tax credits are, which is basically a reduction in your premium price, like I said. But it's an interest-free loan from the government. Because if you are, let's say you launched your business, and so you're on your own, your income isn't what you want it to be yet, and you qualify, you can tell the healthcare.gov what you anticipate making. Let's say that's enough to qualify. Again, use the same example as before. It was $150 premiums, but he should have been paying $500. So that, okay, I just did the math on that. It's about $4,000 of tax credits that you would be advanced. If your business starts kicking ass, doing what you wanted to do, don't stress out that you've exceeded the limit. Because on healthcare.gov, it's a fully honor system policy. They say, I don't care what you're going to make. You tell us what you think you're going to make. Because we're going to find out at the end of the year when you file your taxes. So they don't really care. And it's like, and in my opinion, that's really great. Because I've underwritten these people on healthcare.gov that like just lost a job. So their income went from like, I had one guy who's making like $300K. And overnight, his income is zero. So what we did was, we told the healthcare.gov what his current income was. And we had an explicit conversation, him and I, saying, this is great because in the meantime, obviously you're trying to like cut costs while you look for a new job. Well, good news, your insurance is going to be super cheap. But just be aware, once you land a job and you're back to making six figures again, you will owe this money back. So proactively start saving, which for him, he was totally cool with that because he needed that bridge. Like, I need super cheap. He had family too, so his was expensive. And he obviously couldn't go without coverage. But just go into it with the same mindset, where if you are in a situation where you're not making what you expect to make, and then you start being more successful, just be aware you have an interest-free loan from the government for these premiums, which again, that $4,000, there's no penalty on it. You just owe it back, which is kind of great because you're like, all right, well, now my business is doing great. And hopefully you remember this, or you're working with someone who will remind you of this. Put more aside to pay that back, because once you file your taxes, your accountant is going to run these numbers through a tax document that's kicked out of healthcare.gov. And they'll say, okay, yeah, so John Smith, you owe that $4,200 back. And so that's going to increase your taxes. But again, it's great for people who need that bridge. Now, if you go the whole year and your business doesn't do what you want, well, then you may not owe anything back because you made what you told them you were going to make and the credits were appropriate for you. But so I wanted to emphasize that because I really hate the healthcare.gov website and the way they make you operate. But if you need it, it's great. And for parents who are listening, what's really nice is once your kids, like they could still be your dependent from a tax perspective, but you can, if they are an adult, you can kick them off of your coverage because it's much more expensive for you to carry your kid versus if you have a kid that is an adult, you can kick them off of yours and have them go into healthcare.gov based on their income. That's a great strategy. All right. So let's dive in a little bit more on the individual coverages. Here's another limitation. And so this is really like a split conversation between the employer and the employee in terms of who's listening. When you are getting the individual coverages, one of the problems is you're often limited to the state you're in. Now, this became very problematic / frustrating for my clients when I was in North. Because if you're not familiar with Hoboken, New Jersey, it's right on the river, the Hudson River overlooking Manhattan. So it's very hard for people to wrap their head around the fact that when they would come in to do insurance with me, I'd say, okay, you are stuck in New Jersey with your coverage, like for an individual. So you might have the best and brightest doctors and surgeons literally like 5 minutes away, or like you might even work in Manhattan, but you live in New Jersey. You don't have access to those oftentimes. So that gives people a lot of problems if they're like, well, I need to go see a doctor in like here in Vegas. And I'm like, well, I really need to see a doctor in Scottsdale or LA. They're better there. That's going to be a challenge for you. But if you are a business owner, those limitations don't exist if you're looking to do a group plan. And conversely, if you're an employee and you've got a good relationship with the owner of the company, this is a conversation you can bring up with them and say, hey, maybe we can work something out where I can get group coverage so that I can go to the best and brightest in a major city in a different state. You know, depending on where you live, maybe that's a totally different state to go to the next major city where there's really good doctors and surgeons. So that's a limitation. When you're looking at these coverages, you have to know what's in your network. Now, the caveat to that, and this is, I don't remember if this is was around before Obamacare or not, but the exception to this rule is emergencies. So you could be living here in Vegas, in Nevada, go to Arizona, go to New York, go to Florida, whatever. God forbid you get hurt and end up in the emergency room. Emergency coverage is in network everywhere. So that's, again, that's a really critical thing to bring up. Again, getting back to why we had this, what I led off this podcast. We're worried about bankruptcy and major medical bills eradicating our wealth. If you get hurt in outside of your coverage area, emergency coverage is in network. The caveat to that is it needs to be coded as an emergency by the doctor or nurses or whoever does the actual coding for you. For example, you might get hurt. Like, I don't know, this may be a shitty example. I'm not a doctor, obviously, but like maybe you roll your ankle and you go to the emergency room and they don't deem it an emergency. Like, let's say you're out of state, that's going to come back out of network for you. Like, obviously, like any like quote unquote true emergency, you don't even think twice about this. But if you get injured and it quote unquote isn't an emergency and you still go and a doctor doesn't deem an emergency medically, that could end up being an expensive visit for you because it will likely be out of network. So I just give that as a caveat so you don't try to use the emergency room frivolously, but that is the challenge. Obviously, I'm sure most people listening, like, probably hate going to the doctor, the emergency rooms. They wouldn't go unless it was actually something traumatic, but I just wanted to bring that up. Now, the last thing, I've talked about HS health savings accounts a lot, and obviously this is the topic to bring it back up, but I highly consider the evaluating these for young and healthy people. And the reason is because they're not appealing for people like, well, if I go to the doctor, I'm going to pay out of pocket. And that's essentially true with a health savings account, because they're typically the lowest tier of plan. Like, the plans are platinum, gold, silver, bronze. Platinum obviously being best, bronze being the least coverage but lowest cost, and then vice versa. So health savings accounts are typically in the bronze world. So you have the least amount of premium, the least amount of coverage, especially like from a lower level perspective. You typically don't even have quote unquote coverage until you've hit your deductible, which is often very close to your max out of pocket. So what that basically means is, like, for most of these plans I've seen are like $6,000-$7,000 that is out of your pocket until the insurance kicks in. For some people listening, like, well, I don't care because I typically only spend $1,000 or something like that out of pocket for prescription here. And especially a lot of them, it's like little stuff. Like, for me, most of my expenses are over the counter, but they're qualifying medical expenses. Like, when I buy contacts or contact solution or get the eye doctor, like, I don't carry vision insurance because it's cheaper for me to just go to the eye doctor once a year and just give them my credit card. That's the advantage of like stuff like that, where like they kind of have a menu versus like you don't know what the costs of like little things are in the doctor's office. But with an HSA, you can put the money in. It's a tax deduction. And what's really cool is you don't have to reimburse yourself right away for the expenses you're incurring. So in my example, if I'm spending $500,000 a year on all those ancillary out-of-pocket costs that I wouldn't be able to deduct in a normal insurance coverage because of the way the tax code works for medical, I can expense those through my HSA, but delay the reimbursement. So I keep track of all the $1,000 each year, give or take, and it's just pooling in my HSA. And I don't have to pull that money. Let's say I let it sit there because that my HSA is invested. I keep a cash buffer in there, and every dollar above that, I invest it. Now, I put mine in the stock market. Other people, you can do whatever you want with these. They can be self-directed. So you could buy real estate with, you can do whatever you want as an investment perspective. Mine happens to be in the stock market because that's where I'm comfortable with that. But that being said, I let that money stay invested, and the dollar amount that's in there just can roll over in terms of the reimbursement. I don't have to pull that until actually whenever I want, but my theoretical plan will, I'll let all those dollars just keep compounding, stay invested, and I'll probably pull it out when I hit retirement. But all those expenses, let's just say it's $1,000 a year for the next 30 years. When I decide to do it in my 60s or early 70s, I can pull that $30,000 out of my account completely tax-free. And then the difference has just been growing tax-free. Now, when I'm at that age, and I start taking Medicare, I can pay my Medicare premiums with it. If something happened and I needed to use COBRA, or if you're listening to this and you have an HSA and maybe you're working for somebody, you can pay COBRA payments while you're on here. And you can also do long-term care premiums if you're receiving unemployment benefits. So what I really liked from an HSA is the first one I talked about was Medicare. Because you can treat this thing like an IRA for you, like basically a retirement account. And then you hit retirement age. Again, you can pull out a lump sum of money tax-free, and then the rest can pay your Medicare for the rest of your life so that you're constantly maximizing the tax deduction, but you're essentially getting a third investment vehicle. Like, people know about the 401ks, people know the IRAs. Here's a third one as well. Now, I'll leave you with one last point. And I don't claim to be an expert on putting these together, but if you have extremely high medical expenses, and maybe some that are not covered by your network, but they are qualifying medical, let's say hypothetically you have a special needs child, and every single year, because this is something that I didn't know these plans existed back in the day, but I was helping a client who had a special needs child. We were trying to get permission. Because a lot of the special needs help is not covered, or at least at the time for this particular person, we couldn't find an insurance company that would cover this. So we were just trying to get the insurance company to appeal it, to get special permission, like, hey, can we send this child to this specific program and you guys reimburse them for it? Unfortunately, they said no. But if you're in that case and you're like, I know I'm going to spend 20 grand every single month and like it's not included in my coverage, you can use what's called a health reimbursement arrangement. There's some complexity here and they can be expensive to put together. So I really want to emphasize, if the people who should consider this, it's not a one-time event. It's something, or if the one-time event is so expensive, it's basically a way for your business to reimburse you for this and take a full write-off. But again, it's not as appealing if it's a one and done, because there is a lot of administrative costs to get this thing up and running. And it's not the cheapest to continue to keep running it. But again, if you're a parent listening to this, or if your specific situation, there are ongoing costs that are 10, 20 grand a year, you want to look into the health reimbursement arrangement as a business owner, because there's a lot of flexibility there for massive tax deductions. But again, like a lot of the tax deductions we talk about, it's got to be worth it. If, like when we talk about the S Corp, if you're only making 10 grand, like you need to be making 40, 50 grand, because the administrative costs will eat up all your tax savings until about that 40, 50 grand mark. Then your tax savings exceeds the administrative cost. And so then that's why you do it. It's similar with the HRA. The administrative costs, especially, it's often like the startup of this. So the first year is exceptionally expensive compared to the future years, but it may be worth it. So I want to bring that up for anyone listening to this that has very high medical bills and or they're receiving some sort of treatment that is a qualifying medical treatment, but it's just not covered by your insurance. So again, there's a lot of tax deductions in the medical world that like your insurance probably, like if you're in an HSA, your insurance isn't covering like massages and some of these things that are medically necessary for you. Again, you might have a doctor's note to say, go get a massage. The insurance company doesn't necessarily care, but the IRS is like, okay, cool. Like you got a doctor's note. You have, you know, maybe you're going to physical therapy because of an injury. You have a doctor's note. The insurance company might not care, but the IRS is like, yeah, that counts. That's a write-off. But the way the write-offs work, you may not actually be benefiting from it unless you have an HSA, unless you have an HRA. Some of these will help you with that, because if you're making decent money and just giving your accountant all your medical expenses, there's a very high likelihood they're not helping you. And that's because the way the tax plan works, or code, sorry, tax code works right now, is you need to have medical expenses over 7.5% of your income. So just for hypothetical purposes, if you make $100,000 a year, and you have $8,000 of medical expenses, the first $7,500 don't count. So you have a $500 medical deduction of $8,000. And to make it worse, that $500 goes on your itemized deduction calculation. I don't know the numbers in 2022, but in 2018 or 2019, when this current tax code was started, almost 85% of American taxpayers were not itemizing, because they would save more money by using the standard deductions. So again, you're sitting here listening to this, you're like, oh, I have $10,000 worth of medical. And so then you're like, cool. In that hypothetical scenario of the $100,000 person, they got $2,500. They tell their accountant runs the math, and they're like, standard deduction for you, $2,500, that $10,000, you did nothing with it from a tax perspective. If you had an HSA, you would have made a big dent. If you had an HRA, you would have made a big dent. So hopefully, as always, this is helpful. This topic is one of the least sexy sizzle ones that I seem to discuss, but I really want to emphasize enough that you shouldn't be going around without medical insurance. Even if you get the cheapest ones they have, if you're under 30, you can get a catastrophic plan, and they're as inexpensive as you can get. And if you're under 30, because they're age weighted, you're going to even be in an even lower financial position. And lastly, if you're making very little money, go find out what your tax credits are. I really don't want, because you'd be surprised if you are not making very much money. I've underwritten people in their like mid-20s that were not making very much money. They're paying like $100 a month. And this is in New Jersey, where it's like expensive. they're paying like $100 a month for like great coverage. And so I can't emphasize enough. Don't walk around with no insurance and God forbid something happens to you, either medically or an injury. I mean, that could financially ruin you for years. So hopefully this has been helpful. As always, reach out to me if you have any questions. My Instagram at the Pat Darby. But I really want to make sure you guys get this taken care of. If you're here in Las Vegas, I have someone I can introduce you to get you all this squared away. But don't walk around with no health insurance. This is the time of year with open enrollment to take care of everything. All right. Have a great day. Thank you for joining us this week on Build Your Wealth Muscle. The links mentioned in this episode are available in the show notes. For video clips and more information on tax and retirement strategies for fitness entrepreneurs, please follow my Instagram at ThePatDarby. If you found value in this episode, please do us a favor and share with a friend. If you tag me, that'd be appreciated also. Lastly, for help implementing any of the topics discussed, please book a call. The link is also in the show notes. Thank you again for listening and have a great day.